Mystic Fix, a program for the whole being, with Julia Gordon-Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Mystic Fix. I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. I'm a poet, an author, a scholar of mysticism, and a professional tarot card reader. This is our 24th episode of Mystic Fix, and through the first 22, I aligned everything with the tarot's major arcana. We're not doing that anymore. I'm just having a little fun. In the first part of Mystic Fix, we're going to talk to Bernard Beitman about meaningful coincidences and paying attention to those signs that we get, whether you want to call it spiritual or just a higher level of awareness. In part two, we'll talk with author Connie Zweig about the shadow self. This has been interesting to me because I keep getting authors talking about the shadow, and I'm not really sure what that's about. Maybe it's something for me to look at. In any case, I'm excited to have you here today, and let's get right to it. I am speaking with Bernard Beitman, the author of Meaningful Coincidences that came out recently with Inner Traditions. Bernard, can you explain the concept of meaningful coincidences and how they might differ from what people would call ordinary coincidences, or maybe all coincidences are meaningful to you?
Not to me.
No.
if your firecracker goes off at the same time you sneeze, they're probably not related. they're coincidental. But what we look for in coincidences is two or more events, usually two, that come together in a surprising, unexpected way, mm-hmm. and that seem to have in them of the possibility of an explanation, but it's not evident. Once there is an explanation for it, then it's no longer a coincidence. And that's why you hear people say there are no coincidences. Sure. And the reason they say that is because some of them think that it's randomness that explains them, and some of them think it's God that explains them. Mm-hmm. So for them, there are no coincidences because every one of them can be explained in one of those two ways.
Okay. So you're in kind of a middle ground or a different...
I'm in the middle ground that says, hey, Julia, you got something to do with making these happen. that individuals have agency that mm-hmm. helps make some of them happen, and sometimes we're the most important link in it. And there is randomness, there is probability, and there is mystery. So there's three elements to, generally speaking, to what how you explain coincidences. But until you have an explanation, you just have a coincidence. And when you have a coincidence, it's not the word itself that's so important. It's the adjective you use. Only a coincidence, merely a coincidence, just a coincidence means it's random and there's no meaning in it. If it's something that surprises you emotionally and makes you feel like there's some meaningfulness in it, you might call it a meaningful coincidence because it seems meaningful to you.
Yeah. I know the famous psychologist Carl Jung, he wrote a lot about synchronicities. And are you equating the two?
Well, Jung didn't use the word synchronicity to mean meaningful coincidence. It has come to mean that now.
Oh.
But Jung referred to synchronicity as an explanation for meaningful coincidences.
Okay. Well, why do you think it's important to explore meaningful coincidences? What can somebody get out of that?
They are very useful. But you can't notice their usefulness unless you notice them themselves. So I'm encouraging our listeners and our viewers to pay attention to the possibility that coincidences happen. And both statisticians and my research says they're common. They happen a lot. The meaningful ones are a subset. There are just some of them. So pay attention to them. And what you'll find are lots of potential uses. The most common one is, I feel like I'm on the right path when you get a coincidence happen. And one of the most common ways people feel that is using what some people call angel numbers. Numbers like 1111, four ones. It could be 333, or it could be your own number. Mine was 23. and they give you a feeling that you're doing the right thing. They mark you, your progress as good. So that's one of the big uses of meaningful coincidences.
Okay.
There are plenty of others.
I mean, so I'm a professional tarot card reader, and I have with just my life devoted to spirituality and psychic energy. I tell my clients all the time that it's not a coincidence if you're thinking about someone and you see their name go by on a truck, or you see something on a street sign, or even a license plate that gives you, you know, a message or some answer. So do you consider that I'm looking for meaningful coincidences all the time? Do you think I'm taking it over, you know, doing it too much, taking it to the extreme?
That's always the issue. That's human nature. Mm-hmm. What you're describing is getting right in the middle, where you have to like pay attention and see the connection. So you're not overdoing it, but some people do it in both directions, too much, too little.
I do know people get obsessed with those angel numbers, and that makes me a little crazy. Like, okay, you know, so it's 11-11, big deal, you know, but yeah, some people are photographing their clocks all the time. And I've joked that, what would we have done? Angel numbers probably didn't exist, or not to the extent certainly that they are now, before the age of digital clocks, right?
Exactly. Well, let's talk about tarot, because I was a tarot card reader for quite a while. I did them myself, and the tarot cards are a structured form of creating meaningful coincidences. The connection between the cards and the person's minds are sometimes pretty incredible. I've gotten people mad at me because I've been told them what was going on with them, and they didn't like to be seen that clearly as the cards showed them. So that's a very important element or kind of meaningful coincidence between the cards and somebody's life.
And your background, you said you're a psychologist or psychiatrist? I can't remember.
Psychiatrist.
Okay. So yeah, you know, I have given readings before, and I've had people tell me that they got more in one reading than they did in a year of therapy. And I think it is because they feel so seen. And of course, I always tell my clients that they are interpreting the cards with me. You know, I'm sort of giving them the main symbols on what it means, but they're applying it to their lives because they know what their lives are about and what they're feeling and all of that. So, yeah. Okay. So I never would have thought of that as meaningful coincidence.
Yeah, they are definitely a subset of meaningful coincidence. All the mantic arts are, but I love the tarot cards better than the I Ching. It just suits me better. But I like to talk with you about how that happens, that you can throw a bunch of cards down after you've shuffled them in various ways.
Yeah.
And they reflect what's going on with that person. And I think of this as a current of information and energy flowing through us all the mm-hmm. time. It's around us and it's in us. And then when you do a tarot card reading, you organize yourself with that other person, and uh-huh. you become connected. That's why I have to ask people to pay 2 cents or 1 penny for me to do it. There's got to be an exchange, and that exchange helps connect me with the other person. And through that connection and through that flow of information and energy that's going through us, I deal the cards, and the cards go up almost like a mirror of the moment. And you understand that. So a mirror of the moment tells you the past, the present, and where things are going. There's more to it than that.
And that's the magic, you know, and that's the spirit part. You know, I always tell my clients that the cards reflect what they already know on a higher level, and I'm just showing it back to them. But how do the right cards land in the right places, in the right positions? You know, right side up means one thing and reversed means another. That's the magic of it. And you know, I call it God. I don't tell people how to do God. What, you know, I love that you call it an energy flow. Same difference as far as I'm concerned. You know, we're just using a different branding. So I just think that there is some sort of intangible connection. And the cards are very good at exposing that, really.
I don't think we're talking about the same thing when you say God and I say energy flow. I believe in there's something a lot bigger than us that I can't understand, which uh-huh. people call God. But there's no arguing when you say God does it. I can't, this, you know it, and I uh-huh. can't try to change your mind, and I'm not trying to. What I look for is the intermediate explanations. And energy flow is not the divine light, which some people can also think, as the Kabbalists have told us, the Ein Sof, from which it looks like the tarot cards might have been derived, the 10 Sephiroth and the 22 connections among them. And the Ein Sof gets up into the endless light, where everything is like light and light and light that we can't even understand. I'm here down a little past Malkuth at the bottom.
aren't we all really?
I'm trying to get up a little higher and trying to see like how the energy flows around and in us. And I'm very interpersonally oriented. I love to dance. I do psychotherapy. So when you, Julia, are sitting there with somebody, your energy fields begin to merge, especially because you become very open to the other person's experiences. And, mm-hmm. and the cards connect you with the other person as that person opens up. So part of the reading is not just about the flow of energy coming through you, but the flow of energy and information between you, so that you are picking subconsciously yourself with the cards what's going on in the energy field of the person you're sitting across from.
Yeah. So I absolutely agree with you 100%. I have just, you know, whether this is correct or incorrect, I've made it a habit to call it God. So, you know, to me, it's just spirit.
It's your. I have learned over doing 80 of these podcasts and more that people have their words for things. Mm-hmm. Some people think we're in a simulation like the Matrix, but there's still something behind that simulation. We can't. We're too pea-brained to be able to see the whole thing. We can't. So what we can't. No, we call something, and God is a name for people who want to call it something. And that's what you do. And I think I believe in a God of some version of what other people do. There's something greater, and it has some influence here. But I'm trying to understand how God operates. I understand the mind of God.
I love it. Well, and I love that you made the Kabbalah reference, because I just interviewed someone about Kabbalah and how it's the blueprint of the universe and how everything works. And I'm really excited that you know about that. In our last couple of minutes, Bernard, what would you like to have readers take away from your book? You know, why should they purchase Meaningful Coincidences?
I'd like them to know the name of the book, which is Meaningful Coincidences, How and Why Synchronicity and Serendipity Happen. And I use Meaningful Coincidences as an umbrella term for both synchronicity and serendipity, because they are overlapping and yet separate. And why read this book? Because it's helpful, not only about how you live your life, it's useful, but it's interesting, and it stimulates your curiosity. It makes you wonder about how reality works, because meaningful coincidences are clues to the unseen hiding in plain sight.
Would you consider that Kabbalah?
The Kabbalistic idea is embedded in that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Bernard Beitman, how can we reach you if somebody wanted to contact you?
I have a website, coincider.com, coincider.com. Okay. And that's coincider is someone who experiences lots of coincidences. You can just put my name in your web browser, and you'll come up with my book, my Psychology Today blog. And the website has an email connection so that they can contact me directly through the email on my website, and I'll respond.
Fantastic. And Inner Traditions is graciously giving one of our listeners or viewers a free copy of your book so they can contact mysticfix.com. It has been a pleasure. Really fun to be challenged a little bit and have my work brought in. That was unexpected, and I enjoyed it. So I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Yeah. I do this because it's fun. So it was good talking to you, Julia.
Thank you, Bernard. That was Bernard Beitman talking about meaningful coincidences. After this information segment, we'll get to part two with author Connie Zweig and the Shadow Self. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Mystic Fix. Next, we have author Connie Zweig talking about the shadow self. Welcome, Connie Zweig, to Mystic Fix. You are the author of the book Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path. And that intrigues me a great deal. As someone who's done a lot of spiritual work, I think I have been one to not want to go to the dark side. I think we spiritual types tend to talk about positive affirmations and keeping in the love and light. So tell us why the need to approach that shadow self.
Okay, so let me step back for a bit and be sure that people know what we mean by the shadow.
Yeah, please.
Because there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. So in the 100 years ago, when psychology was first being launched, psychiatrist Carl Jung coined the term personal shadow to refer to all of the material, all of the contents, feelings, actions, wishes, aspirations that are hidden from view, that are not in our conscious awareness. So they're in the dark, not in the light. They are the feelings and behaviors that are forbidden or taboo, and therefore that are not lived out. And now we know that the body and mind are one. And so the shadow is not a corner in the brain somewhere. It's in every part of us. There's material repressed in our muscles and our nerves and in the whole body, mind, in our feelings. So when we're really small and we're taught by the parents and grandparents and clergy and teachers that something is wrong or bad, we're forbidden, we learn not to do that or not to feel that. If anger is bad, you stuff it away in the shadow. If your artistic talent is deemed a waste of time, you stuff it away in the shadow and don't express it. And so it doesn't have to be, quote, negative material. It's only negative in relation to the ego, the conscious personality. So anything at all can become shadow content. So for me, I started meditation when I was 19. And as you say, really longed for the light, really longed for awakening, had a dream that the whole world could become enlightened if everybody meditated and so on. And then I began to see that there were actually issues in this community that were hypocritical. There was sex when we were told to be celibate. There were lies. There was coercion, financial issues, and so forth. So after about 10 years, I left and I began to read Jung, and I went into Jungian analysis and began to work with my dreams and encounter some of my own shadow material. What had been repressed because I built a spiritual persona in this community where there was a kind of a group think about how we should feel and how we should behave. And so there was a persona developed. So what had gone into my shadow? Well, my career ambitions, my relationship to money had gone into the shadow, my sexuality, my developmental needs for emotional intimacy had gone into the shadow. And so I did a book called Meeting the Shadow, which was an anthology, a collection of a lot of different expert thinkers about this issue. And then I returned to graduate school and to get my doctorate and did a book called Romancing the Shadow, which was an authored book about the method I discovered of how to work with shadow material, especially in relationship. And then I became a clinician, a practicing psychologist for about 30 years. And in my late 60s, I wrote The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul, which is about the shadows that we meet as we grow old in our ageist culture. And so this extends shadow work for people in midlife and beyond. During this time, I had written my dissertation on shadow and spirituality, and I had an early version of a book called The Holy Longing, which I then decided to revise this year as Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path. So this is a very updated, current examination of our spiritual yearning, our longing for transcendence and for awakening, and how that can lead us to encounters with the shadow. And the context is kind of the post-Me Too movement, looked at sexual shadow in secular settings like the workplace and the military and so forth, but they didn't look at it in religious or spiritual arenas. So I thought that was really necessary. So I began this research and, you know, Julia, I was just shocked to discover how many allegations of abuse there are now in contemporary communities.
Sure.
And whether they're Christian or Jewish, shamanic or Vedanta or Buddhist, all denominations now, teachers are acting out their shadows in ways that are really harmful to their students.
So in the classroom, you're saying they're doing?
Well, these are not classrooms. It's not academic settings.
Oh,
these
okay.
are sanghas and monasteries and
okay, like spiritual teachers, mentors.
Spiritual teachers.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So this is in clergy, swamis, roshis, rabbis. So across denominations in the spiritual world, the teachers, the clergy are acting out power, sex, and money shadows. And I needed to understand why this was happening. And I wanted to use depth psychology, which is the understanding of the unconscious, to explore why are these teachers doing this? What are they needing? What are they communicating in this shadow behavior? Why are the students remaining and not speaking up? How did they become so devoted with such blind faith that they've lost their voices and their agency? And so there's this teacher-student dynamic going on that I wanted to explore.
Yeah, you're making me think of Osho. You're making me think of Bikram, of Bikram Yoga. That was a big scandal there. And that is fascinating. Now, would you say you're seeing it mostly with men, or is it equally with women who are in a teaching?
So chapter 5 of the book has dozens of these stories, these anecdotes, like Osho and Bikram, but also many, many more. And the majority are male teachers, because the majority of teachers are men, right?
Got it.
So most of them, but there are women. There are also reports of women acting out in harmful ways. And there are a few of those in the book.
Interesting. So what is your solution? Is there a solution to this?
So before we go to that, let's kind of talk about why this might be happening.
Okay.
As you probably know, there are many, many people now having breakthroughs in consciousness, right? At the same time that we're seeing multiple interconnected crises around the planet, we're also seeing spiritual breakthroughs. And if you know the podcast, Buddha at the Gas Pump, Bat Gap, there are, I think, 700 interviews now of people who are having experiences of awakening. They're having states of consciousness of they might call non-duality or unity or transcendence. And part of what's happening is that they don't have either an intellectual framework or a moral framework for understanding this. And so they pronounce themselves teachers. And they begin to gather followers. And they haven't done emotional inner work, many of them. So they haven't really understood their own unconscious processes, their motivations, and their wounds. And they don't have training in moral development. And I would go so far as to say some of them are sociopathic, which means they don't have conscience. And if you read these stories, you can see that that's the only explanation with some of them. But they're not all sociopaths. Some of them are very narcissistic, meaning that their self-centered needs take precedence over everybody else. So if this is the case, if these folks are having spiritual breakthroughs, but they're not emotionally developed and they're not morally developed, then why is it that so many people are flocking to them and obeying them and devoting their lives to them in some cases, right? And going off to secret communities in isolated places with them, because that happens a lot, so that they're out of view. Each of us has early unmet childhood needs that we carry into adulthood. For some people, it's the need to belong. And that's the biggest force that drives them to join a group or community and feel special and feel belonging and feel less isolated. For some people, it's the need for certainty. They can't live with certain kinds of uncertainty or paradox or not knowing. And so they want someone who knows, who tells them what to do, who has a higher level of consciousness, who they believe can do no wrong. And so they become obedient and in some cases childlike and, you know, give a kind of blind faith to this idealized parent, we could say. So in psychology, we talk about projection, which is a mechanism by which we unconsciously attribute something we don't see in ourselves to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
So in this dynamic, we might attribute compassion or wisdom or enlightenment or spiritual advancement to the teacher and think that we are lesser. We are inferior, we are less evolved, subordinate, whatever it is. And that dynamic goes both ways. And the teacher begins to feel, some teachers are carrying that projection, that adoration from thousands of people. Uh-huh. In India, from millions of people. And so what happens to that teacher? If that teacher is born into a lineage where he's told he's special, let's say he's born as a Rinpoche in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, or right. He's born as, you know, the incarnation of a guru in India, then he already has a certain ego identity. And then people, right. So that's what we call ego inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the ego in the teacher is not in the proper place in the psyche and it starts to become inflated, that teacher begins to think he's immune to consequences.
Wow.
And he's entitled to sit on a golden throne, to tell people what to do, to criticize and shame people, in some cases physically abuse people, in some cases sexually assault men and women, because the psychology has not been explored, the morality has not been taught. And so the teacher gets caught up in, and most of the teachers are isolated. They don't have peer support. They don't have anyone they can talk to. So they become really trapped in this projection. And the students, the believers, the disciples do as well. Some of them believe they can only awaken through this intermediary, or they can only feel belonging through this community, or only know what's right through his teachings.
So what's the answer then? What do you suggest? Does your book tackle that?
There are some people who are more susceptible to this than others. Some people's psychology leaves them more susceptible to this. And when there is real abuse, like sexual assault or verbal abuse or financial coercion, I just had someone tell me that his teacher had started out asking for tithing and then asked people for a portion of their salary. And then now he's asking people for, when the family dies, for their whole estate, turn over their estate to him. So there are these, you know, these stories about this abuse. So when this starts happening and people begin to feel betrayed and traumatized, many people suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. So what are the symptoms of that? Anxiety, nightmares, reliving the experience, let's say rape. And post-traumatic stress needs certain kinds of treatment for recovery. So does sexual trauma. So does betrayal trauma. And this kind of religious or spiritual betrayal, for me, requires what I call spiritual shadow work. So in my earlier books, I explored how to work with the shadow in all of the secular domains, in relationships, at work, in aging, with friends, and so on. So now, how do we do shadow work in the spiritual arena? If we have post-traumatic stress, if we're in a teacher-student relationship and we don't know how to leave, or we don't know if we should separate from the teacher. And for me, this is a very individual decision. I'm not prescribing. This is not a book about cults where I'm saying this is all bad and you just have to get out and go back to the conventional world. That's not what I'm saying. There's tremendous value in spiritual communities, and many of these teachers transmit a lot of wisdom, timeless wisdom, compassion, beautiful practices that can give us spiritual experiences. So this is not all good and all bad. And that's one of the reasons it's difficult to leave. Mm-hmm. So for me, recovery is about spiritual shadow work and beginning to examine the projection. What have we given away to this teacher that we can't see in ourselves?
Wow.
And begin to look at our own, how do we experience our own light, our own wisdom, our own compassion, and begin to pull back or reclaim the projection onto the teacher that gives him so much power? How do we begin to reclaim our beliefs, our critical thinking? Because if we have surrendered independent thinking and allowed ourselves to kind of join a group think, we've buried our doubts in the shadow.
Oh,
we've buried our fears, right?
Yeah,
we've buried any critical thoughts in the shadow. And to begin to let them bubble up and ask ourselves about them. And it might come with some anxiety, but this is part of the process. Mm-hmm. And then our authentic feeling, because in spiritual communities, we bury sadness. We're not supposed to be sad if we're meditating. We bury anger. We're not supposed to be angry if we're good Christians or good Buddhists. And to begin to allow the repressed feelings to surface. And the relationship to the body and the body's wisdom, gut instinct. So if we repress our gut instinct in these situations, then we haven't allowed our body to tell us where there's danger.
Right.
Where there's a message from our body that we're not getting.
Mm-hmm.
And to begin to reclaim our agency, our capacity to act on our own behalf. How did we lose that? How did we silence ourselves?
Yeah, such an important question today. And I know so many people are, you know, they're afraid of being canceled and for just having an idea that's different. Connie, we are out of time, but Connie Zweig, your latest book is Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path with Inner Traditions. How do people find you if they want to connect with you?
So ConnieZweig.com has all my workshops. If you're interested in reading Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path, learning spiritual shadow work in community, I'm organizing free online support groups to read the book together and do practices together. And if that interests you, you can email me, Connie Zweig, Z-W-E-I-G, at gmail.com. Just please put spiritual shadow work group in the subject line and give me your time zone, because these are organized by time zone. Please don't send me a long story. I just get too much email. But I will connect you to other people in your time zone and help you to organize a group to do this work.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That was author Connie Zweig talking about the shadow self. Stay right where you are, because we have tarot cards coming up next.
This is Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
And we are back with some tarot card reading.
Our spiritual journey tonight will begin.
Can't outrun your fate.
Let me tell you about you.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
Take a good look at these cards, young man. They contain all the secrets of the universe.
What does it say?
Hello, Donna. I am doing my readings for Mystic Fix. Do you have a question for me?
I do. My question is about Alzheimer's that runs in our family. My mother, my sister, and my brother, all three died of Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. And I was wondering if I was going to get it.
Okay. Let's I don't see it. So,
I'm so happy.
Here's what I see. First, we start with the Four of Pentacles, which says you're safe or secure. We have the Death card next, which, you know, in a question like this would tell me that you have kind of a normal death, whatever that is. You know, I mean, something's got to take us down, of course. But, you know, with Alzheimer's, I tend to see cards like the Moon in reverse, which is insanity. You know, we get the word loony from lunar. And sometimes I'll see like the Seven of Cups in reverse, which is about living in illusion or disillusionment. I'm not seeing anything like that with you. Now, your center card is the King of Wands. So, Donna, your genetics look to be on your father's side. Okay? So, whatever your father's genetic predisposition is, I think that's what you inherited. I can't remember who did you say had it?
My mother, my sister, my oldest sister, and my brother.
Okay. So look to your father's side, and that's the health concerns that you may or may not be carrying. But I don't see you getting this. So I love that. We have the Chariot next. Yeah, the Chariot is successful and driven and reaches his destination or her destination. So if you are saying, you know, I want to live to be 100, then you can do that, you know. I will also say the Chariot is about movement and activity as well. So it wouldn't hurt to remain active and maybe as far as the brain goes, you know, keep learning, things like that. But you've got the Six of Wands in reverse as your last card. Now, this tends to be a card of loss. But in the case of the question, do you have Alzheimer's? Loss is what you want. No, you don't. you lose that marker. So I feel very good about your brain health. And I just want you to stay active. And I see you living to be, you know, a good age, taking after your father's side.
Terrific.
Okay.
Yes. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Take care.
Hello, this is Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. This is Julia from Mystic Fix. Do you have a question for me?
Oh, well, yes, I do. Thank you. I have a question. We're a small government contracting firm, and we are working on a lot of proposals. It's proposal season, and I'd like to know how successful we're going to be.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I like this question. It's different. Most everyone asks me about love, you know? Okay. So here's what I'm seeing. Page of Cups is in reverse to begin. And this is interesting because you do show to be approaching this shyly. And I would say toot your own horn. Be bold, make the big claims, you know, so long as you truly believe you can ensure that they'll happen, of course. You look like you're going about it a bit too politely, a bit too shyly, and that could get you overlooked on some of these. Now, you are showing Carolyn as the Queen of Swords. She is our sharp woman. Swords are the brain, the thinking. And so she's a leader as a queen. I am definitely seeing you in a power position here. Now, we have a central problem. You have a King of Cups in reverse. Now, this could be, you know, kings are authority, and whether it's an authority over you within your organization or whether it is the government, you know, since these are government contracts, this is a king that feels wishy-washy, feels a little unreliable. It may be, you know, if we're talking about your organization and if this were somebody you were working alongside or who was above you, it might be that it's all on you and you can't count on this person or you can't count on the administration to be like fully behind you. There's something wrong with your support system, all right? So okay. I'm a little bothered by that. Now, that said, I have the Star in reverse, and the Star is a card of dreams coming true, but in reverse it says not quite yet. Your final card, however, is the Two of Wands, and this is a successful partnership going forward. So I do feel that something is coming of your efforts, but it doesn't look to me to be a multitude of proposals being accepted, or even several. But it might be one good one. And I would say that part of the problem is you're not quite supported enough, and that this is showing up, the approach is just a little too shy. You may need to be bolder. You may need to do follow-up phone calls. You may need to take some people to lunch. I don't know. I don't know what's ethical here.
Okay. Hey, I will take that to heart.
Good.
So you know, advice is always welcome.
Right. Right. Excellent. Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate the question, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. If you're interested in what I do, you might want to hop over to Amazon and pre-order your copy of Tarot Life Lessons. Tarot Life Lessons are the real life stories of some of my clients and our adventures. The book will be released November 7th, but is available to pre-order now. Are you looking to deepen the trust in your relationship? Or maybe you're just looking to feel more physically and spiritually alive? Mystic Fix would not be possible without Comma Flight, which can help you do just that.
Kama Flight is a mix of acro yoga and Thai massage. It combines both the meditative and the physical to create an experience like no other. See it for yourself on Instagram at KAMAFLIGHT. Thanks for staying with us till the end of Mystic Fix. Please like and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you would like to be on the show to get your own tarot card reading or be registered for the book giveaways, visit mysticfix.com.